If my mind can take me that low, where can it take me the other way? And what can I achieve? And I think there's a really big thing wrong with the world this day, that someone could look at you and go, pull another one. Like, there's always an agenda.
Yeah.
No one's that nice and wants to help other people. And I think that's wrong.
All right, guys, welcome back to the studio. Today we have Glenn Marsden, founder of the Imperfectly Perfect campaign, public speaker, podcast host, and best-selling author. Welcome to the studio, Glenn.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. All right. You just tracked in on a 13-hour flight from Australia.
Just for you, just for the show. Yes. It was a long flight, to say the least.
My goodness. And so you are out here in Santa Monica, California, promoting Imperfectly Perfect campaign.
That's correct. Yep. So the international best-selling book series, as well as several projects, as well as coming to see some incredible people as yourself who I've got to know for the past several months.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And just to give the audience a little bit of context, Glenn first authored your own biography, which led into volume one of Imperfectly Perfect campaign, volume two, and now you're about to launch volume three. Talk about your journey with your founding story with Imperfectly Perfect.
Whew, where do I start? So the conception of the Imperfectly Perfect campaign stemmed out of adversity. I lost a friend to suicide. Now, prior to that, I'd say around 7 to 8 years, I went through what they call body dysmorphia. So being in the health and fitness industry, I find myself when I was 30 years old, comparing myself, living in Bondi Beach in Australia. People really do look like they come out of a magazine or a catwalk. So essentially, I could look back now and look at images and see a six pack. And you've seen images of me and I look great in all tens and purposes. But to the untrained eye, as in the mind, where your mind can take you in terms of mental health and what mine did when I was 30. We just had our first kid and I presumed when you was 30, again, when you grow up, 30 is kind of old and you think, well, you know, I'm settled down now, I've got a career and I'm loving life. And all of a sudden, just this huge hurrah just hit me comparing myself. And it started with 2 to 3 minutes in the mirror, just really picking myself, judging myself, tearing myself apart. And for anybody who doesn't really understand body dysmorphia, there's two ways in which I've been accustomed to it. One is you're obsessed with perceived flaws. So you can stand in front of the mirror. As I said, at my better stages, 2 to 3 minutes. At my worst stages, 2 to 3 hours. Just consistently looking at the same areas. Mine was this perceived flaw that my chest wasn't as developed or my arms, my biceps weren't as big as the guys in the gym next to me. Now, I can look back on my journey and I can wholeheartedly remember telling my friends, I can't feel it. I can't feel it in my chest. And they was giving me the better exercises and the bigger exercises. And I suppose it got to such a deep and dark place that it really hit me that there was no way out for me. And during the time, as I said, we had our first child, we moved to Bangkok, take away normality, take away friends. It was a different culture. We lived in a high-rise apartment. I did look over the edge one day. Not that I was ever going to do anything, because I knew that I had a child and I had a wife. But just that thought process, the pain is too much at times. And you can understand why people sometimes do take that way.
Yeah.
And again, people really do need to start speaking about these things, because it was when I broke down in front of my wife, she started noticing. And as I said, to the untrained eye, as well as the mind, there are people who were seeing me on stage in front of a couple of hundred people teaching group fitness, seemingly loving life and, you know what, wearing singlets. I used to be the first one on the beach. Behind the scenes, I was in front of myself, looking at myself, pulling myself apart. We'd go out to restaurants. I'd disappear to the bathroom, say that I was drinking a lot of water, so I kept on needing to go to the toilet, except I'd be in a public restroom. I'd take my top off just to see if my chest had changed. Now I can look back and think, Glenn, that was so extreme. But yeah, it got to that point, and essentially I broke down in front of my wife one day, and she said, look, I'm not seeing you. Our son is not seeing you. You're going to have to seek help. And that was the first time I broke down as a man. That was my vulnerability in its rawest form. And she helped me. She helped me get back. And several years later, because a big attribute to mine was social media, comparing myself, living in Bondi, body beautifuls, as I used to call them. And I noticed a friend back from the UK had passed away. Now, again, looking on social media, you see highlights. So I saw cars, I saw Perfect Life, I saw his son, I saw his wife. Little to say, I started digging deep and asking friends, and they said he's sadly taken his life. So for me, that hit hard because as someone who'd experienced it, his story could have well been mine.
Yeah.
Had I have had that clouded moment of judgment and not spoken out. So it gets me to this day because I saw an interlude through this video montage of his wife that had put up, and it was him and his little boy. So just thinking about those moments where his son won't get to kick a football around with his dad or learn to ride a bike or have his first kiss with a girl and tell his dad, and gets me to this day. And it was just something in me that was like, I was traveling to Sydney one day. City would move back from Thailand, and there was this big sign, and it was this big marketing campaign, and it was a little old lady with a bunch of flowers. And I was like, oh, what's that about? So you imagine being in a CBD, you go in, it's busy, everyone's time poor, everyone's going. So I read it, and it was about mental health. This old lady had lost her husband, and I was like, what kind of marketing campaign is that? Honestly, I was frustrated, I was passionate because I lost someone, and
yeah,
that's what fueled me. And I was like, how much money have they spent on a nationwide campaign saying a little old lady's lost her husband? This is the number to call for mental health issues. And I thought, these kids were not going to see that. They're not going to read it.
Right.
Even my age group, there's a disconnection there.
Right. They're going to glance at that.
Yeah. So within that moment, it was just like, what can I do? And because I did photography as a passion on the side, I was like, you know what? I'm going to bring the raw reality of mental health, what it looks like. And I know that can be controversial because people don't like being faced with what hits them hard at times. And we've seen a lot of shows like 13 Reasons Why, and we've seen the controversy around it saying that's too much. But for me, it was like that transparent moment. So I started reaching out to Sydney's local celebrities. Then it got to Australian celebrities. Then it got to corporate leaders. Then it got to different demographics, different audiences, to people who we pertain to have it all. And I said, look, drop the mask. I said, I want to capture you on a portrait. No lights, no mics, no makeup, no nothing. I want a diarized piece of writing or music that took you back to when you were struggling. And I take them to this local warehouse and I just walk around and let them get their moments, not let them trigger themselves by being in it too long. And then there'd be a split moment where I'd be like, just look at me. And you just get that tear in their eye, or you get something. And it resonated with people. Within 3 months, every single news channel in Australia, by 6 months, network coverage, and by 12 months in America.
It's amazing. It's such a beautiful campaign and a beautiful mission. And I think bringing that awareness, not only globally to everybody, but to men specifically, opening that door for people to talk, it's huge. Mm-hmm. It, like you said, a lot of people aren't talking. And you, as you mentioned, you broke down for the first time, you know, as a man and to your wife and with your first little one, you know, by your side. It's a lot to carry for a human being, you know, and you're a father, you have a family depending on you. And your journey was so relatable when I read your biography, you know, and then not only after finding your biography so relatable, but volume one, volume two, and then just connecting with some of the mutual friends that we have in those chapters. Kind of how the volumes break down. There's how many folks are in a volume?
So there's 15.
15 per volume.
5 public figures across every different like corporate sector, the entertainment.
Yeah.
And then you've got 10 people, everyday people like myself, just sharing their stories.
It's amazing, yeah. And just what a global campaign it's become, and you get to travel all over the world and make connections for people and helping people find resources. That's big. And I think a lot of people don't understand suicidal ideation. It's very black and white for some people. They don't understand how you shared just kind of looking over that ledge, knowing that you weren't going to do it, but the thought is there. And so I think a lot of people can relate, but they don't talk about it because it's the dark side of, you know, your own internal perception of yourself.
Yeah. But I think that is the big thing. Like, I'm sat across from you now, and we've had conversations prior these months, and the conversations just flow.
Yes.
Like between men, which they didn't one day. So we have come a long way. But I do believe there's still a lot more. And that's why these campaigns, these movements, they're consistently coming out. And I think it's amazing because the more you can clap the loudest, the more you can cheer the loudest for people speaking, and that in its entirety. I mean, when it first went to air, I always remember, and Casper the Friendly Ghost had nothing on me, my first time on live TV. And I remember being in the studio and I saw my photography and I thought, it's look pretty bloody good, I'll tell you that. And then I saw the teleprompter with the host and they were looking at them and I'm like, okay, so they're reading it. And then I'm thinking, you know what you hear from TV? Where's the red light? Where am I supposed to be looking?
Yeah.
Next minute, this guy comes through and is like, 3, 2, 1, you're live. This was live TV on wow. Sunday in Australia. First of all, I said Casper the Friendly Ghost had nothing on me. I was pale. And then you could see my eyes darting around like a startled rabbit. But the thing was, why I'm bringing that up is because even within that, that was in the first 3 months. And one of the things the host said to me, she was like, so what are you going to do next, Glenn? What's next? Like, now you've shot these and you've done this campaign, are you going to move on to the next? And that right there in its entirety, I got what she meant, but it really underpins and it undermines being present in the now, what yeah. something is being created in the now, not what's next. And then what followed from that was, is it a nonprofit? Is it a charity? Is it this? Is it that? Now, you've got to remember when someone starts something with so much passion from the heart, who's had no experience, no resources, just reached out and it's almost divinely led and it's just continued to grow. It gets so big so fast and it gets ahead of you. So when someone's like, is it a charity? Is it this? Again, they're putting a dependency on something to know, instead of appreciating what it's doing in the now. And I think even when it comes to mental health, that in its entirety within that conversation is, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do? It's everybody needs to know what everybody's trying to fix, where yeah. sometimes it's just as someone who's experienced it, listen, be present in the now. And that's what we're missing, the human element, that connection part that I do believe we still need to bring back. We're moving so far ahead with technology, with AI, but still, sit me in front of you.
Exactly.
Get to know the person.
Build a team. And that was, I related to so much in your book, just sharing about, is it a nonprofit? Where is it going? What's next? How is it evolving? But being present in the moment, mine evolved the way it evolved. And we had a similar journey. That's, I feel like, why we connected and the conversation flows so freely over the course of the last few months. And now I could relate to so much of that because I had to be present in the moment, but the people around you aren't so present in the moment. They want to look past or prior. And it's like, it's evolving into what it is right now. And you also having the background in photography, trying to pair that and bring your connections together to bring the campaign to what it is today. I mean, also being the man behind the lens, stepping out from behind the lens and in front of the lens at the same time. It's a lot of psychology there, right?
yeah. Well, that's the big thing. Someone actually said it to me the other day. She said, Glenn, even the analogy of when you stood in front of that mirror for 2 to 3 hours and what you've done now, you've shattered the glass, you've shattered the mirror,
yeah.
you've broken the moat, but that was you trying to get through there. And the photography is that lens, that eye, and you can capture it so beautifully. So for anybody listening to this, obviously check those portraits out, and they're so stark and they're so raw. And that's what I wanted. The same as the stories. You've heard me talk to people. You've heard me talk to yourself.
Yeah.
And it's like, right, your accolades are amazing.
Yeah.
But that's just what they are. That doesn't make you who you are. So I want to know you. What makes you you, what you've been through, and why you do what you do.
Yeah. A picture says 1,000 words.
All the time.
And I've been there too. I remember, just trying to correct a back injury. I've worked in the mental health field for years. And I worked with a lot of young folks with intermittent explosive disorder, and they could be aggressive at times. And I've taken a tumble a time or two and had some injuries. And I was healing a back injury, which led to my 6-pack abs. And it was just based out of adversity yep. that the abs developed. But I remember kind of like getting into it. And so I always had brothers in the fitness realm. They were big bodybuilders, huge muscles. And I just wasn't tapped in like they were to that. Mm-hmm. But then once I started getting into the kind of the workout realm of correcting that back injury, I can relate to getting in front of the mirror, like checking to see, are my abs still there? Yeah, yeah. Like checking, it's a lot huge. Of psychology. And then like, once you start getting, because I wasn't working out for the aesthetic bonuses, but the aesthetic bonuses come along with it. And then once you start seeing that, then it's all mental work after that, because You have to figure out, you know, your diet, you're eating for fuel, you know, and you're building muscle and your brain at the same time. It's a huge balance.
All at the same time.
Yeah.
But these are the conversations within the fitness industry that aren't openly spoken about neither.
Right.
When I went on to a celebrity's podcast, and that was the first thing she said to me, Glenn, what you're doing is incredible. But she said, the thing with you is you're relentless. Like, I'd reach out to celebrities, I'd reach out to public figures, and I'd follow up if I didn't hear back. And I'd constantly go till I got a yes or a no.
Yeah.
And she'd be like, where does it come from though? Because I understood you lost a friend. And that was the first time that I really shared my story, because I never wanted to make the Imperfectly Perfect campaign about me.
Yeah.
Do you know, sometimes we see them and we hear some people's stories and we're like, okay, we've heard that now, so what are you gonna do next?
Yeah.
So I wanted all of it to be away from me. But then they needed that connection, why it was so passionate towards me and why I was so relentless. So the first time I said that and I started delving into the body dysmorphia, that podcast episode, she said, got thousands of views and downloads. And not only that, her boyfriend suddenly started speaking to her about it, and everybody else within the fitness industry as males, because body dysmorphia is not widely known, as in an open topic.
Right.
When I explain the symptoms of it, they're like, oh yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm in the mirror for like 3 hours and I'm obsessed and I won't go out and I'm in a bad mood if I don't look a certain way. In fact, when me and my wife got married, her best man disappeared about a month later and we could not find him. Nobody could. And the thing was, he's got his own story, which he can openly speak about. But when we did find him 5 years later, he'd gone to London because he'd been struggling mentally. So we had dinner together. We sat down and I was like, I've been struggling mentally as well for the past few years. He said, why, what you've been going through? Body dysmorphia. What you've been going through? Body dysmorphia. Right?
Yeah.
So we sat there and we poured our hearts out, even though he was my wife's best friend. We just sat there talking.
Yeah.
And it was like, what were the commonalities? Or you'd walk past a shop window and you'd check yourself out. And if you didn't look good, you'd be in a mood all day. Or
yeah,
like you wouldn't take your top off, or you'd do this. And people had started noticing. And you'd want people to, like, you're justifying in your head. And I always remember, and I give props to my wife. Like, she's an incredible woman. Because what she put up with somebody who goes through body dysmorphia, at the time, it was a sense of, can you not see what I'm seeing? Why can't you see what I'm seeing?
Exactly.
Has it changed yet? If my arms got bigger, and she'd be like, Glenn, do you want me to say yes? Okay, yes, I agree with you. If that will shoot you up.
Right.
Okay, I knew I'm not crazy. And then you'd be in a whole new cycle. So to actually seek help and speak about it, I didn't think I was crazy when I finally spoke. And I think that with men, they think they're going to be judged. They think there's this shame and this fear. And I just think it's still this stigma. You can speak to some guys who are a little bit older. When I worked in construction building this whole thing, and I said that I was going to America, I was taking mental health over. Oh, why? What's that about? Told them. Oh, yeah, that's cool, but I'd never talk about it. But why?
Because they feel like it's a sign of weakness. Yeah. Yes. And it's not. I think it's a sign of strength and kind of getting it out there. I think a lot of people carry a lot of weight. And I know even for myself, I could say, gosh, this was probably through COVID, because I went very hardcore into fitness. A lot of people went the other way during COVID. I focused solely on fitness because my mental health organization was essential. So I had to still lead for my team. I had about 100 employees at the time, and a lot of things were stacking up during COVID. So I went crazy working out all the time. I was working out in my studio because the gyms were closed, but I had bring my weight equipment there. And then back at my house, it's like a house full of funhouse mirrors. Because have you ever noticed too, none of you don't look the same in every mirror. And lighting changes everything. It's called it like a funhouse because I was like, why do I, when I go out in my garage and I work out and I got a mirror out there, I'm like full six pack. In this mirror, like they're washed out, you can't see them. Yep. So then I'm like doing crunches in the house because I don't look right in this mirror. Yep. I played that game. Yep. Like it's a rabbit hole, and you get down there, and then there's the whole seeing yourself on camera, you know, like getting the podcast together. Like you said, you were seeing yourself as Casper the Friendly Ghost on camera.
And it's huge.
Like, yeah, then you have that, all of that to play with. And then I kind of like identify as a soul. Mm-hmm. So like seeing myself on camera like operating from a soul standpoint is interesting because then you're like seeing yourself in that form and then you're looking at your arms and then you're looking at your angles.
But yet you will go out with a group of friends and you'll have a photo and yet your eyes will be directly drawn to yourself.
Yeah.
And all your friends will be like, you look great. You look fine. And you can look back at pictures. Like I can honestly look back at pictures when I went through my worst time. And I remember being in Bangkok and I was training with this guy and I took my top off and he did a shot of me. 2 hours later, I was pulling myself apart.
Yeah.
But yeah, I shared that image on social media to portray that I was fine.
Yep.
And I looked incredible. I really did. I near enough had the eight-pack. Like I was lean and I was straight. And I was like, Glenn, there was nothing wrong with you. So that shows you how deep and dark your mind can take you. But
absolutely.
The saving grace for me was when I did seek help, I was like, if my mind can take me that low, where can it take me the other way? And what can I achieve? So that, again, I'll say in its entirety, what I have achieved and set out, look where it's got, 12 million people, over 500 of the world's biggest names. And it's not by having the resources. In fact, like I've told you before, I jumped in construction. I left fitness, jumped in construction as a laborer, 12 hours a day, 6-7 days a week, stood hosing a wall at times as a laborer, but it gave me time as clarity. What do I want to do? How do I want to do this? I haven't got experience other than management in fitness. How do I do a campaign? I need to learn marketing, the intricacies of public relations. I haven't got additional money to pour into a publicist. How do I get this out there? And each step of the way, it's almost like, you know, that Whitney Houston song, that step by step, brick by brick. It's been that, one foot in front of the other. And that's what I'd say to anybody that has got something placed on their heart. Just do it. Say yes. Because where I am today, I'm sat in LA across from you doing this incredible show. And yet this started with a guy who said yes to taking some images to show the reality, drop the masks, let's show people for who they are. Am I comfortable with myself these days? Of course.
Yeah.
Like, and this is the thing. People say I look like Simon Pegg. There we go. I'm just putting it out there because I know the podcast people are like, it looks like someone him. Like I came to an Emmy event over here. And I walked in and there was a couple of celebs about and this guy like looked at me and he's like waving. I'm like, is he going to kick me out? Is the security thinking, who's this guy? How's he in here? So I'm like there and I'm like that. And he came straight across and I'm with a group of friends and he was like, oh, you're not in my ear. I was like, not who? And he was like, Simon Pegg.
Hilarious. Like,
get it all the time. So, yeah.
Well, man, we can really get inside of our heads. And I know we're our own worst critic. And I can relate to what you said too, just taking a photo and just dissecting it. And it's like looking back, it's interesting. Just looking back when you do that, you can see, wow, why was I so hard on myself? Even if it's just from a few years ago.
Yep.
Like, or if you go back to your 30s or your 20s, because I'm in my mid 40s now. And looking back when I used to criticize myself in my 30s and just tear myself apart. And I'm like, wow, that was a little much. You were fine. Like, I wish I could have told myself that back then, but like you're in a different headspace and times are different. Social media, you don't even catch yourself in the comparison game till you're kind of in it. You don't even realize that you do it, you know, sometimes. And that can be a rabbit hole too. I think that people are starting to become more self-aware with campaigns like Imperfectly Perfect and people starting to share their stories. You know, both men and women, everyone's got their journey. But as I've gotten to know you, I can tell you are being divinely guided, because when you share your story, just like you said, the song Step by Step, you can see when you flash back, because, you know, I shared, you know, my stories of adversity just start through my own journey. They were so similar. When I read your book, I was just like, wow, this is why we connected. And flashing back, it was like some of those days I couldn't see that I was being divinely guided and that it would all work out, forming my organization and onto the next and the other, you know, initiatives that I'm launching and becoming a part of, and IPC Volume 3 and all the things. It's like all part of the process.
Yep.
It was all laid out the whole time. Isn't that something
when you realize?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's just like, I think so important. Like regarding podcasts, because you have the Imperfectly Perfect podcast, and just getting those messages out of you know, hope. And it sounds cliche, but like for anybody going through those times, because it was dark for me, yeah. and that I didn't have anybody to talk to, because I mean, this, I'm just floating back to 2016. Doesn't seem so long ago, but still, I didn't have anybody to share those things with, because people didn't share,
yeah.
especially in my circles at the time. It wasn't these were not topics that I could share openly with people and not be judged or perceived as potentially weak while you're starting a business. So it was like, keep your head down, shut up, and keep going. And that's dark. It's
but lonely. The irony is, half those people on that table would have been experiencing struggles themselves.
Absolutely.
Had they have spoken.
Yeah.
And this is a thing.
Most people have.
Yeah.
And it's just about sharing. And then I think it's about separating your ego yeah. from being vulnerable. And it's okay, I think, just sharing, setting your ego aside to share. Not only helps the other person, but it helps you in the process too. And I think that it's therapeutic in that way. So it's not just an act of selfishness, because it does for you, but it also helps the other person too.
Well, I think this is the thing with the ego. If we can shatter the ego, we all have one. It's necessary to have one. Absolutely. To some respect. But you've got to think about it. Social media is moving too fast, too far ahead. That human connection is being lost, that human element part of it. Then you've got ego on top. Social media is keeping our ego attracted to it.
Yeah.
So we're comparing, we're criticizing, we're looking left and right, but we're not feeling our vulnerability, our emotions. Even when you spoke about that being divinely led and the spiritual aspect of it, I didn't grow up around faith. I didn't grow up around spirituality. When I started experiencing it, I started seeking and searching. And this is the thing, where do you go? Social media.
Yeah.
So you fall down another rabbit hole, because you're like, well, this person says that, that person says that. Everybody is going to say something, whatever you were seeking and searching. And again, that is that ego part going, right, I need to go towards these people. I always say, even, let's bring it to these manifestation coaches, right? Yes, manifestation is real, whether it's good or bad, we always attract it. But if you're on social media and you're seeking, you're searching, you're getting all this algorithm, bringing you so many podcasts, so many things talking, this is the way, and this is how it works, and this is how it is. What I should be telling you is, all these 10, 20 videos that are coming to you, each person seems to be different, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, the common theme is they're all telling you that their program will work for you. What it should be telling you is, you're on your own unique journey. Drop the ego a little bit, believe in yourself, and try and sit in some silence without social media, because faith, spirituality, profession, it is all linked to that ego part of ourself. And if we don't break it, we're going to keep going down this, and we see more mental health struggles because of it. It's huge, and there's no big shebang. That's,
yeah.
I do want to get that across to people.
Yeah.
Like, I agree. Read it, you hear it.
Yes.
Spiritual awakening, all this.
Spirituality is your own unique path.
Yes.
I shared that with you when I went through mine. That's why I had to separate. I had to get off social media.
Yep.
I had to disconnect from everybody that was pretty much in my circle, with the exception of being able to still having to work.
Yep.
I was doing a lot of volunteering at that time, because that was part of my journey while I was starting up my organization. And I didn't interact unless I had to.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was like doing the deep work, though. It was no social media, no socializing, and kind of I understood that I was on a spiritual path, just didn't understand all of it. And I knew I wouldn't if I was bombarded with social media and other people's opinions. Because once you start sharing about an experience that you're going through, people want to put in their own opinions, and then you're not left with your own clean, concise perspective of what exactly is happening to you in those moments, right?
It's the hardest thing. It's even like, oh, people are going through spiritual awakenings and kundalini awakenings and doing all this, that, and the other. And I'd be like Googling it, and I'm seeking and going, tick, I've done that. That's happened. Tick, tick, tick. Oh, so maybe I've had a spiritual awakening then.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Right.
These conversations where people actually speak, there's no shebang for some people.
Yeah.
Like when I got baptized, because I did have a dream and he said baptism, I remembered the dream. And the next day, serendipitous occurrence happened where someone said, do you want to come to church? I reached out and I said, it's not like stoic, is it? Like the British church, like hymn books and that's it. And he was like, no, there's a lot of people singing and praising. It's great. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it a chance. So I went. First, I thought it was a bit cultish because everyone's arms are everywhere.
Yeah. But
what I did appreciate was that they got people up with imperfections, mm-hmm. sharing stories, their addictions and how they'd overcome it. And I was like, oh, this is different. At the end of it, he was like, oh, look, we're doing water baptisms next week. And I turned to my friend and said, oh, probably do them all the time, don't they? He said, no, every 6 months. So how things have happened step by step. So I thought, oh, that's maybe my next step. So I started learning a bit more about faith. But again, because I was open, I wasn't closing myself to off other people or anything.
Yeah.
But when I was getting baptized, I was hearing from people of faith saying, oh, you're going to be filled with the Holy Spirit. You're going to speak in tongues. You're going to have this whole shebang. And I'm like, here we go. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Anyway, I went under the water, came up. And the thing that I did feel, I must admit, there was a man and woman, this couple, and they both embraced me afterwards. And for someone who's married, who his friends live overseas, and males don't really hug each other, but for another male to hug you and see you for you and appreciate you just to go, you are enough, that felt good that that couple hugged me. So it was like this immense amount of love, like shared. But days went past and weeks went past and I was like, well, not feeling anything, nothing changed, yeah. And nothing's this and nothing's that. And it wasn't until I kind of went in on myself, but these conversations aren't had when you said you did the deep work. But what does that deep work mean for you?
Yeah.
What does it mean for you? Because we can look, and these days, like everything, everyone seems to be selling a program online.
Right. Yes.
And that's the thing, I think wisdom comes from experiences. Experiences are free. They're what make us grow. And I'm not saying you can't do a program and you can't help people and guide people, but just that little bit of wisdom that can help someone on the path. You went through deep healing. What did that look like for you? Okay, so it might look like that for me. Well, it could do, or it could be entirely different.
That's why I couldn't talk to anyone while I went through mine, because I knew that it wouldn't resonate with people. Yeah. So or maybe there was a few people I were sharing things with that once I started sharing, I was like, oh, shit, I wish I didn't share that because now they think I'm crazy and like I am crazy. So yeah. I had to dial it back. And, you know, for me, it meant a lot of stuff. It meant the mirror was involved in pieces of that for me, where I would stare at myself in the mirror and have conversations about where I was going and the direction I was heading in, and then just kind of self-acceptance, mm-hmm. number one, of just your body and your mind. And also too, journaling. I started writing down my thoughts so I could audit my own thoughts. Right. So I could see what was in my head on paper. And again, like when we were talking earlier before we got filming, we talked a lot about intuition and paranoia. And when you're on your journey, yep. and other people are coming into the mix and you're feeling, oh, this person might not be a good fit in my life any longer, or this person coming into my life might not be a good fit, yep. and you don't know. Like that's when I was on my spiritual path, it started out with me questioning intuition and paranoia. I was like, am I a paranoid person? Yep. No, it was intuitive. I was, you know, figuring that out. And those aren't conversations that you can have with just anyone, especially while you're going through it, because it will dissuade you. As I mentioned to you, I would have conversations with certain people and they're like, you're paranoid. That's not yep. happening. And then like, as it reveals itself months down the road, it was exactly what was happening. So I was, you know, trusting my own experiences and my own, you know, thoughts. I think trusting yourself and like, just like I said, just getting in touch with myself and then kind of accepting the reflection in the mirror, huge, mm-hmm. huge part of it. So, yeah.
Same thing when I got to that place of just knowing I was good enough.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. Like we both speak to a lot of public figures who are very big in the media circuit. And they've got some of the biggest issues with looking at themselves because of how media portrays them.
Oh, yeah.
The body shaming and stuff. And it's like, you know what? Just settle down.
Yep.
And it's easier said than done. But I've got a really good friend in Auckland, in New Zealand. She's one of the biggest fitness influencers, Rachel Newsham, bless her. And she was going through a time. I didn't know her several years ago. I mean, I'd followed her because I did their program, this Les Mills International program. And essentially, she saw what was wrong with social media, what people were portraying, and it was just really turning her off. She was just like, I'm on stages and I'm being turned off here. And then Glenn came along and he just said, it's not all perfect out there.
Right.
And then just removed all that. And it was just like, it's just opened the floodgates for people to accept themselves as who they are.
Yeah.
And to find their connections and their people and then build myself from it, to be honest with you, because as I bring it back, and like I mentioned at the start, people were like, is it a nonprofit? Is it a charity? Is it this? And I was like, one of the big things was for me, I never wanted to ask for funding or donations. And I brought a board of directors on at one point because I listened to the noise.
Yeah.
You know how you do, you seek and search, and everyone's like, it's going big, you need to do this. But there was something in my gut. Again, that spiritual journey, I never knew that was there at the beginning. Something kept saying no. The night before I was going to sign that board of directors, I emailed every one of them and said, look, I appreciate your help, but something, no. So that moved me forward. And I got put in front of the corporate sector. I got put in front of corporate leaders who the money started coming in, like the multinational companies. And there was one guy that said to me, Glenn, I like the way what you're doing. He said, if you want to make a difference, make a nonprofit. If you want to make an impact, learn the skill set of a business. You can do what you want and you can pour your own money. And that sat with me. And I was like, okay, now that in its own right has been hard, because someone who was managing fitness clubs to then build a sustainable business based off their personal brand as a public speaker, going out there, consulting, marketing. And these days, because of everything, one foot in front of the other, it's like I did a university degree. The intricacies of marketing, influencer marketing on top of that.
Yeah.
Strategizing,
you're
sponsorships,
all of it.
Partnerships, public relations, the amount of offers that I got asked if I wanted to move into public relations because of how much media I attained for what I was doing. It's amazing, but I never saw myself here.
Right.
This was a guy that was in fitness who was quite content until he went through body dysmorphia. So sometimes those catalysts, like how deep your mind can take you, can certainly take you the other way if you apply it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have to be all of it. And you were building a brand like kind of unknowingly. You had your mission, you have your thought process and kind of letting it all evolve by being in the present moment. But then the brand is evolving the whole time. Like that's part of the step-by-step, the path.
But it's just not it's not the hiding yourself in the shadows as well. And you'd know because you've got your own business and then there's yourself.
Yes.
But at the time when you are led by something that's service-based, you want to make it about other people.
Yes.
And like I said earlier, it was a sense of, I didn't just want my story out to be there. So I didn't want to make it about me. And it was that time with the corporate leader. And he said, Glenn, if I wanted to invest, who do I invest in? And I'm like, are you investing me? Like, you deal with me. And he was like, you could have fooled me because I don't see you anywhere on that campaign.
Time to step into the spotlight.
Like, wow. Yes. And that's kind of when I put my business sense head on, started learning it, got mentored in certain aspects. And I was like, I'm the face of it.
Yeah.
People need to know why I'm connected to it, what I'm about, and what I can do. And that's when the floodgates open. But it also, again, the reality of business. You're going through different levels, new levels, new devils, as they often say. And you're learning. Business is hard. The hardest aspect, I would say, is people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When you're doing great things, you think everyone's going to be there to help you, but people can look over you, look around you, look through you. They can shit on you from great heights. And it's kind of one of those, why am I doing this?
Oh, yeah.
Why do I? And I'm not speaking anything new. Every business owner has been through it. But that test of time, this is coming up to 8 years this time. Consistently, I've built my personal brand so I can pour into it the challenges.
It's crazy that we've walked such similar paths because it's 9 for me and 9 years for me. And just like you said, like how a lot of people don't talk about body dysmorphia, a lot of people don't talk about the entrepreneurial journey either.
Nope.
So like those dark times and
until they've made it
where you think you're exactly. And when you think you're doing something, you think you're doing something great and people are going to want to jump on board and help you, not hurt you. It's quite the opposite. And that happens. And you and I have talked many times about that. That was very similar on both of our paths where I wasn't really expecting anybody to open doors for me because I had a lot of connections. Truly, I did. But anyone that knows me knows I counted on nobody to do that for me whatsoever. I just didn't. But I didn't think that I would have connections that would block me either. And that happened. So that was like a whoa, didn't see that coming because I thought I was doing everything right by just operating presently in the moment. And I just knew that, you know, I was a good man and I was doing good things. And that was the direction I was heading in. I just didn't see those curveballs coming and it was dark.
But what you just said there, do you see the thing in the, this got put to me once. It was the sense of going, but Glenn, other people don't know you yet.
Right.
And it was like, say you're in bed with the entertainment industry and you're dealing with a lot of that. We could be the nicest people ever, which we know we are. We can say it till our heart's content, but they've dealt with other people
right.
who have portrayed yes. someone who is nice. So their guard is already up. So I didn't understand that at the time. I'm like, yeah, but I wouldn't do that to them.
Right.
But they don't know that because they've had other people say that. So with me, it's a sense of building that relationship for a long time first
yeah.
and proving that. But at the end of the day, it is be who you say you are.
Yep.
Like just show up for people and be about the relationship because longevity and sustainability in business or personal lives, we both have got some great connections, but they're relationships.
Yeah.
With some of the world's biggest names. And that's not to throw any kind of ego there. That's to go, I don't have to name drop.
Right.
You just have to see who I'm with all the time. But that, I would rather take their accolades away and know their heart than what they can do and what they've done and all of this. But again, it's one of those things. People can look, and I think there's a really big thing wrong with the world this day, that someone could look at you and go, pull another one. Like there's always an agenda.
Yeah.
No one's that nice and wants to help other people. And I think that's wrong. Because there's people like myself and you, and I know a lot of people who have been through absolute adversity who do want to be of service to people without any hidden agendas because they don't want other people to feel that they the way that they feel or they've experienced or they've lost friends. That's media again. That's absolutely. Social media.
Yeah.
It's so wrong that people can't think that there are people out there that truly don't come with expectations, that do want to help.
Absolutely.
There's always got to be something.
And another,
no, they doesn't.
I know. And another piece I can relate to so deeply with you is like your mission with IPC, Imperfectly Perfect Campaign. Same with the Inner Circle for me, because as I was kind of putting together the Inner Circle on-air podcast, it was about other people. And I kept trying to put other people. I did this with my nonprofit too. Mm-hmm. I kept trying to put other people in the front
yep.
While I did everything behind the scenes. And it doesn't work.
No.
It has to, just like the gentleman you referenced said, but I don't see you.
Yep.
So if I'm investing in someone and I don't see you, you know, it's falling blank. So I had that too. And I did it again with the podcast because I wanted it to be about other people more than I wanted it to be about myself. I just needed to be in the front yep. to bring the awareness.
It's funny how it works, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting.
Because people who do generally have that heart, they do push others.
Yes.
And they do clap the loudest for other people. Like I put the international events on and someone said to me, I brought all the co-authors up on stage and they get to speak alongside the celebrities. So it's special for them. And there was one of my mates who actually turned around and said, why don't you give yourself more stage time? I was like, what for?
Right.
Like it's my event.
Yeah.
Like it's for them. And he was like, yeah, but I'd be up on stage. Like there's all these people and you want to speak. And I was like, for me, it's like sitting back and just taking in what's being done and appreciate it and go, right. Because now I have walked this spiritual path.
Yeah.
And I do say I've got a personal relationship with God. One of the things I do say is what God can give, he can also take.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to be humble in yeah. a way that shows me that people can clap the loudest for other people and everyone can grow equally. Because to me, there's too many people, I think, in this world as well, even in the spiritual world, that preach this collective. But yet, you've got to have that discernment to see whether we actually means me yeah. or it really does mean we.
Yeah.
Because some people who do go on that journey, they still like to be the preacher. They
yeah.
still like to be the one with the limelight and go, I'm close to God and I'm the spiritual mentor and I can help you through this, that and the other. And it's kind of like, if you truly are on a collective as we, wisdom is shared. Everyone can grow together. So I don't need to go, hey, look at me. I can go, hey, look what I'm doing, but look what this person's doing as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that, if anyone looks at the Imperfectly Perfect campaign, can see it throughout. It's
transparency.
Yeah. Yeah.
The transparency there. And I think that you make a good point about spirituality and a lot of what we see on social media, because spirituality can be a beautiful cloak for a lot of toxic behavior. And you get a lot of influencers out there that are probably just having ChatGPT write something for them that they're reading for the camera
yeah.
based on spirituality and by my 1999, you know, platform, yeah. you know, whatever it is that they're peddling, dog and pony show, and it's just inauthentic and they're just looking for followers at that point. But with Imperfectly Perfect, it's you're literally bringing community together. It's its own global movement, yeah. Right? Exactly.
But your journey, I'll just ask you, for this spiritual journey, if you thought, right, I'm going to do a program on this, this, and this, the more I've learned on that, I mean, it sounds so cliche, but the less I bloody know.
Yeah.
So I'd feel wrong by going, but now you can buy my $9.99 right. program and learn all about my practices and what I do. I'm still evolving.
Yeah.
I'm still growing. It's so I'll life. Do my career.
Yeah.
And if you've got a question, I can share my experience and the wisdom I gained through it. That's all I can give you.
Yeah. It's a lifelong journey and an ever evolving process.
Yes.
That's where
there's no quick fix to anything.
I feel the same. And there's just really experience is the best teacher, and you can only walk your own spiritual path. You can, like you say, you had a dream and then, you know, you went to church and you went through with your baptism. I had a very similar experience to that too. I got baptized later in life. My, my brothers were baptized. Everyone in my family had been baptized except for me. Somehow I flew under the radar. I was the baby. Oh. That never happened. And then I did it later in life. It was through my process of starting my organization. Mm. So same. And
I think we must have to go through that, though.
I think it must be part of the process.
To see where you are. And like, because there's a whole religion thing as well, isn't there?
It was interesting because my godson was at my baptism. Right. Isn't that funny? So I was already a godfather and my godson was at my baptism. Oh. So as I was an adult. So that was interesting. But that was, that was part of my journey. And it was just, you know, that spiritual path is interesting, putting everything together for your own mental wellness. And just really, like, I feel like with both of us mutually on the platforms, it's just about sharing through experience, not offering unsolicited advice. Like, that's not my platform, not telling people to walk this way, talk this way, or that way. It's more about I'm just sharing what my journey was, and you share with me what your journey was. And then together, collectively, you start a movement where people just start sharing more openly, and then everyone just feels better.
It creates a ripple effect. I mean, there's always call to actions where people know where to go for help if they need that further assistance. But yeah, it's not my job within IPC as when I started it. I wanted people to realize, and this is through the book series as well, it's like, do we not ever think of history, right? Where do we learn about history? People's stories.
Yeah.
So why do you think your story is not important for your legacy? Like, just think about it. Like, in years to come, when you've gone and a little child picks up a book and reads your story and reads about you, they're going to learn something.
I felt so unrelatable when I went through my process because, like I said, I had isolated. And that was all those years ago, you know, starting back in 2016. And then all of a sudden, you and I connect, like, out of nowhere, still, I think off camera, we were trying to figure out how that happened because we do have mutual friends, but none of them connected us.
Yeah.
So interesting. And then just all those years feeling unrelatable. And then all of a sudden, I'm reading your book and it's like, my own story, a lot of it. And it was just like, holy shit, I feel like validated through everything that I went through that. And someone else like understood what I went through because you literally went through a lot of it too. I have to commend you though, because as you shared early on when we got going here, you know, you have babies, you know, they're not just babies now, but they've grown, but and a wife, and you were going through all of that. I was alone, you know, I had split from my employer and my ex and, as I was going through my journey. But I mean, I couldn't imagine, you know, like having to face those adversities with, you know, your team counting on you, you know.
Yeah, I will say, and that's why I always say, like, she is my savior, my wife, like, give her everything. Because at the end of the day, you have literally got to have someone in your corner.
Yeah.
And I always remember, I was in the bathroom one day and it got to the point, even as a business owner, and you're trying to do everything, you're trying to run it, you're wearing all the hats and all this. And this is what needs to be spoken about as well. I was in the bathroom one day listening to my kids running around and just nearly in tears thinking, I can't contribute to this. I can be present, but I can't contribute financially at the minute because I'm trying to do this, this, and this. And where's the money coming in from the minute? And it was COVID during that time as well.
Yeah.
And I remember there's an image that I posted on social media and you could see it in my eyes. I was just withdrawn. I was just, and then obviously things turned around because I started working a little bit more smarter than harder a lot of the times, because when you're that passionate, you go, go, go.
Yep.
And it's like people don't realize if you just take a seat back and see where you are and sidestep and pivot. And I always say this to anyone. If you've got a mission or anything placed on your heart, do not quit your job. Get a side hustle.
Yeah.
Because it takes your mind. If we're talking that spiritual sense and people talk about lack, scarcity mindset and all that, I'm like, don't put yourself in that position then.
Yeah.
Get a side hustle. So at least you know X amount of money is coming in weekly or monthly and you can pay your bills. And then you've already taken your mind out of lack or scarcity because you know that that's going to be there to pay that and build on top. Too many people these days, I think, again, with social media is, I need to be this entrepreneur. Yep. I need to be this. And all I can say is the levels that I've grown to and what I've reached and attained, when you are in the circles with a lot of successful people, please don't bullshit.
Yeah.
Please just be transparent, because the last thing I'll say, like, before you question or anything, is that one guy said to me, tell me your story, Glenn. And he was enormous in terms of wealth. And I sat there and I was like, well, I've got nothing to lose. And I was like, well, you know what? It was bloody one of the hardest things I've ever done. I was like, da-da-da-da-da. And he said, let me stop you there. He was like, if you'd have come in here and told me all these highlights and how easy it was and you've done this, this, and this, it was like conversation would have probably ended in less than 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Never lose that, Glenn. Because the people who matter, the people who will make you grow, and the people that will get you in the room and at the table, they know what it takes.
Absolutely.
So that's why when you see these fast routes to success, and it sounds cliche when people say it's the process that makes you become the person. It sounds cliche because we see the quote, but it's true.
It is true.
You need those scars because you are not going to be able to achieve what you want unless you've gone through them.
Absolutely. I agree. Glenn, like, I went through so many different wellness practices during that journey. I had become obsessed with working out. I was actually working out 3 times a day. So I would walk 8 miles a day, and then I'd work out in the morning and then in the evening also, like, during that time. I actually injured myself because I got too obsessive.
I can imagine.
Yeah. And then you know, I learned to dial it back when I was recovering from the injury and craft more of a reasonable self-care routine for me, fitness and just body image and accepting. What are 3 practices that you can share with the audience that you find helpful for you in your journey?
For me, I'm still very much into the fitness. So it's not about as much aesthetics as much how I feel. And it is a community in there. So a lot of the people who maybe don't like fitness and think, oh, I've got to work out, group fitness. Go and get in a community.
Yeah.
You don't feel good, but you get to know friends and you get to build that. And then that, again, is just a byproduct of feeling good, healthy. Meditation. I don't want to sound like one of these people who knows how it happens and how it does it. I used to be too much in my head. Mm-hmm. Everyone's like, I can hear people now saying, oh, well, I bloody sit there and I've got 100 things racing around my head. That was me.
Yeah.
And to this day, it still is at times. Just let those thoughts flow in. And just sit there in silence and just see how it goes.
Lean into it.
Just don't. And then the other one for me, I must admit, is I'll do the infrareds, or I'll go and do a Epsom salt bath. And again, I'll use my mindfulness in that time. I'm not a big one for journaling these days. I used to be at the beginning, but then I started seeing all these daily motivation videos when people are up at 3 o'clock journaling. And I'm like, I'll do it when I've got time.
Yeah, it's when you got time, literally.
It does all fit in.
Yeah.
There's no work-life balance for me. It's integration. It's where it happens and what you can do with it.
I agree. I totally relate to that. And sometimes journaling for me is on a post-it. It's just like, because I had time to write something down on a post-it and there it goes.
And then
the Epsom salts, it's when you squeeze it in, but I've always got something there to, you know what I mean, work into my wellness.
And that's
relatable. Yeah, exactly.
You'll hear too many people preach about this, this, and this. And hey, this is no judgment. People do have their practices, but sometimes people just want to hear pure honesty.
Yeah.
I've got kids.
Yep.
I get my up, goodness. I meditate, I want to see a daily motivational video that's funny with a woman or a man who's a child. Get up.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, all these ice in the face and all this, it looks perfect, but you've got no kids.
Right.
Like, come on.
That's what gets me the most, I think, is that when I watch a lot of my friends that have kids or young people that are starting families, and social media is just so overbearing right now. And they think they need to look like the Incredible Hulk.
Yes.
And they want to have all the money and they've got to start the business. That's a lot of pressure to take on when you're just in your early 20s and you're starting a family and you've got littles depending on you. It's a lot of weight to carry on your shoulders. And I think just step back, just be present in the moment, take things one step at a time.
Agree. And just share your story.
And share.
If yeah. I can just say one story just to let anybody know, and it's from a good friend, Rob Mack, who once told me, and I just want to say that the power of the story and how this is the most important thing. He was once walking, he's a TV presenter in Beverly Hills, a man and a child was stood next to him, probably about 16 years old. Rob is a good looking man, and he was dressed smart, and they said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Oh, I'm going to an event. It's a byproduct of what I do." And then the young guy looked at him, and he wears this bandit around his wrist, and he said, "What's that?" And he said, "For 16 years of my life, I hated myself, the way I looked, sounded, and I dug a knife into my arm." And then he got better and he sought help. In that moment, the young child started crying, right? And the father didn't know, uncontrollably. And Rob was like, "Oh, are you okay? What have I done?" And he gets me to this day, right? And he said, "This was going to be my last walk with my father tonight."
Wow.
And then I was going to go home and so, that's the power of the story, that yeah. that happened at that right time.
Oh, yeah.
Saved a life.
That's so fine.
Share story.
Absolutely. Glenn, where can the audience find you on social?
They can go to imperfectlyperfectcampaign.org or my official website, glennmarsden.com.
Amazing. Well, the amazing Glenn Marsden. It's been yes. an amazing time. Amazing. Such a pleasure to connect and share your story and what's about to come with the Imperfectly Perfect campaign. With the audience.
And you sharing your story.
Absolutely. Volume 3.
Volume 3, baby.
Happy to be a part of this. All right, guys, that's a wrap.